We are, though, talking about Pentecost, so today's reading is going to just be one reading from the story of Pentecost out of the book of Acts. It's from chapter 2, and it's verses 1 through 4, and I'm reading the New Revised Standard Version. Hear now these words. When the day of Pentecost had come, they were all together in one place. And suddenly, from heaven, there came a sound like a rush of a violent wind, and it filled the entire house where they were sitting. Divided tongues as of fire appeared among them, and a tongue rested on each of them. All of them were filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak in other languages as the Spirit had given them ability. May we add blessing and understanding to the reading of these words.
This song is written by Cynthia Cross, a wonderful singer songwriter from the Chapel Hill area. It's called Your Spirit Moves in Me. Just like the tree whose roots grow deep, just like the river flowing on, just like the sweet winds blowing on, Your Spirit moves in me. Just like the stars that circle around, just like the wind wills bring song, just like the sun that's shining down, Your Spirit moves in me.
This Pentecost Sunday is Pentecost, a lesson from an ancient made-up story. As I mentioned earlier, today is Pentecost. It is a day when Christians remember the story of the Spirit coming to the followers of Jesus 50 days after Jesus' tomb is found empty. The Penta in Pentecost actually means 50 days after the tomb was found empty. Now, being that I am a Christian minister, and being that Pentecost is a pretty big day in Christianity, some even incorrectly call it the birthday of the church, I would like to spend some time today talking about the Pentecost story. Now, hopefully, my take on the story will resonate with you spiritually, even if only in a small way, but hopefully it will resonate with you in a little more deeper way than that. So as you heard from our reading earlier, it is a wildly unbelievable story. As a matter of fact, to our very modern minds, it's very unbelievable. The reality, at least in my mind, is that it probably wasn't entirely factually true. However, I also have to say, in my mind, it is true. It's a story that tells the tale of how a small, marginalized, fearful group of followers of a wandering rabbi who were scared to death about being associated with him for fear that they would wind up being crucified just like him. To tell of how they stopped hiding in the shadows and began actually living by his teachings. In a world where folks who claim to be Christian storm the Capitol building, intentionally marginalize others, celebrate toxic masculinity, and turn a blind eye to things like gun violence, affordable health care, reproductive rights and equality, a story of a group of folks who actually start following the teachings of Jesus could certainly prove to be informative. I would argue that at its core, this less than factual story is a story about a group of people deciding to live into their beliefs, to live their lives on fire, so to speak, to actually live as though they believed in and valued the lessons of the wandering rabbi taught. It is a story of people finding the courage to risk being who they say they are. As I said, in times like these, that is certainly a valuable lesson, regardless of how factual the story is or isn't. Of course, no one knows what actually happened in the room there that day. Personally, I don't think that tongues of fire actually appeared on anyone's head. I also don't happen to think that people started speaking in strange languages. I mean, a couple of the languages that are listed a little later in Acts that they claim that they spoke didn't even exist at the time. So I kind of think they probably didn't, and if they had, we would have known what they were saying. My guess is that those things are meant to be understood as metaphors. If I had to venture a guess about that day and the events leading up to it, I'd imagine that after their teacher's death, they were afraid and probably a bit lost. At that point, being associated with Jesus would have definitely been scary, not to mention it would have been dangerous being associated with him. I assume that they were probably wondering what would happen to them next. So, what they did is they gathered in an upper room and hid, closed the windows and doors. Then, as they were hiding up there, they probably spent a lot of time talking with each other about what Jesus and his teachings meant to them, just like we do with folks who we lose from time to time. We sit, we share stories about them. I assume they sat together, scared in that upper room, windows and doors closed, but sharing stories of what his lessons meant to them. So it wouldn't be that big of a leap then to believe that they started recalling Jesus' stories and his interactions with others, thinking about things like how much better things would be if they practiced turning the other cheek, if they practiced taking the log out of their own eye before removing a speck from someone else's, if they practiced feeding the hungry and visiting the sick and clothing the naked. In my mind, they probably thought about how exciting and positive life was when they were with him and following his teachings. And then they probably thought about what life was like now as they were holed up inside of four walls with fears and trepidation about going out into the world. I like to think that they realized that even though they very much enjoyed each other's company and the activities they shared inside those four walls, they wanted more out of life than that. And they wanted more for the world than that. I'd like to think that they realize that following Jesus' teachings of love and equality required action. And somehow, they found the courage to do so. When they found the courage to do so, I suspect that's when people started noticing them again. They began to live differently. They became the people who welcomed and embraced the outcast. They became people who took care of the sick, fed the hungry, clothed the naked. They sold their possessions. And together they held things in common. Admittedly, nowadays, the Christians we hear from most, the ones that we hear from most on television and the like, we call those folks back then communists and socialists. But hey, maybe we should care less about what they think and more about what the words of Jesus teach. The reality is that for their day and age, they were radical. They included women and slaves and the most despised people in the society. They didn't call themselves Christians. They called themselves people of the way. They were seen as the ones who lived differently. Maybe that's something that we all should aspire to. The good news is that there is a sort of Pentecost movement rippling through Christianity and even other religions, particularly in the more progressive wings. The proverbial fire that ignited the first disciples seems to be putting a fire under folks nowadays in those circles. More and more, folks are thinking about what it means to live life every day in a way that can change individual lives and even help the world change. Folks seem to be figuring out that their spirituality is not about going to church, but about being the church. More precisely, being what the church is supposed to be in the world. Love. In formalized religion, it's actually called the missional movement. The idea is for institutions, specifically the people in those institutions, to stop spending so much time and energy advertising and trying to attract people to join the congregation, and instead to start spending time going out into the world. It's not unlike the early Christian communities did after Pentecost, as they spread the teachings of Jesus by living them out in their daily lives. And in many ways, it's not surprising that we ended up here. You see, in general, the church, the big C, has become synonymous with the larger dominant culture. In many, if not most ways, it's no longer countercultural, like it was when the disciples first left that upper room. It has become an arm and an agent of the corporate consumer culture in which we live, as well as a tool of politics. The missional movement sees being a follower of the way as an extraordinarily countercultural way of leading life. If the church is to be the organization that takes seriously the teachings of Jesus, it should have no part in the status quo. It should not support the practice of the modern consumer-driven mindset. It should be in the margins of society, not only calling out for love and equality and compassion, but being a living example of what that love, equality, and compassion looks like. One of the fascinating things about living a missional life together is that it breaks down barriers between people of different faiths and spiritual perspectives. When our primary focus is on love, equality, and compassion, the other differences seem to fade away into the background. Why someone's practicing love, equality, and compassion seems much less important than the fact that they are practicing love, equality, and compassion. The interesting thing is, once you start practicing a missional life, it's very difficult to ever go back again. Your life changes. Being the change you wish to see in the world, well, it's self-reinforcing. Catching the missional spirit means seeing that many of the things that you were taught about life and religion were wrong. Once you see life as a mission, you just can't unsee it as being that way. When spiritual organizations take on a missional outlook, it provides them with the opportunity for the communities they exist in to see them for how they live and not just what they profess to believe. How they live. Not just what they profess to believe. So the story of Pentecost, while not completely factual, certainly should challenge spiritual people. It should challenge us to live out what we say we believe so powerfully and so completely that we are seen as a people who live differently, not just the people who think and believe differently, but people who actually live differently. The Pentecost story, fire appeared among the people, but the reality is that people living in the precepts of love, equality, and compassion, those who live that out in their lives are their own fire. And frequently, their behaviors will cause others to catch fire to the same causes, to become passionate about living life out that way. So, the Pentecost story, factual? I very, very seriously doubt it. But it does contain a whole lot of truth. And the truth is that living life holed up inside of four walls pales in comparison to living a life on fire for love, equality, compassion. And living lives that focus on love, equality, and compassion has a way of not only improving the world around us, it has a way of improving our own spiritual lives as well.
Imagine this, the
heaven. It's easy to give a try. No hell below us, above the solar sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no country. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to give or die for, and no religion to. Imagine all the people living alive in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer. I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will be as one. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood of woman and man. Imagine all people sharing in all the world. You may say I'm a dreamer. I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will live as one.
Let us bow our heads together. We recognize that sometimes we fear the concept of spirit, particularly its proclivity for being unruly, unexpected, unconventional, downright unconcerned with what we want or how things have always been done. The thought of some spirit that stirs things up, not to mention stirs us up, leaves many of us uncomfortable. The thought of some spirit that's not interested in the status quo, with how things are, how things have been, or even how we want things to be, can leave us feeling unsettled, uneasy, and somewhat uninspired. In the moments when this thing some think of as spirit pushes and challenges us towards the unknown, we would often rather cling to the comfortable and the familiar. May we be moved beyond boundaries of language and nationality into endless and extravagant love. In this world that is so in need of forgiveness, peace, and healing, may we seek out those who overcome fear, who offer messages of hope, and who practice graciousness and love. Amen. See this blessing. May you walk in harmony with each other and with creation, recognizing that we are one. And may your life be full of happiness and love. And may you share that happiness and love with all of those you meet.
Thank you, Mark, for those inspiring words. This next, there's another song by John Lennon encouraging us to kind of do what Mark's talking about and reach for our potential and recognize our true being. In
Cause the cold's gonna get you.
Gonna knock you right in the head. You better get yourself together. Pretty soon you're gonna be dead. What in the world you thinking of? Laughing in the face of love. What on earth you trying to do? Well, it's up to you. Yeah, you. Karma's gonna get you. Gonna hit you right in the face. Better get yourself together, darling. Join the human race. How the world ain't gonna see laughing at fools like me. Who on earth do you think you are? Superstar. Well, right you are. But you're shining on like the moon and the stars and the sun. It's your shine on, on and on. So come on, if the karma's gonna get you, gonna knock you off your feet. Better recognize your brothers and sisters and everyone you can meet. Why in the world are we here? Why on earth are you there? When you're everywhere, you're gonna get your shine on. Like the moon and the stars and the sun. It's your shine on. On and on and on and on.
Oh yeah.
Your shine on like the moon and the stars and the sun. It's your shine on and on and on and on. It's your shine. By the moon and the stars and the sun, it's your shine.